Welcome to another Michigan Writers Series presentation. Tonight, our guest is Catherine Fishburne, Professor of English here at Michigan State University. Professor Fishburne is a scholar and author of several books on quite different subjects: women in popular culture, two books on Doris Lessing, one on Richard Wright, one on the Nigerian writer Buchi Amisheta, and one published only 2 years ago on early African-American experiences, and now this, her latest, her first book of poetry, The Dead Are So Disappointing, published just this week by the MSU Press. Welcome.
Thank you.
You have certainly enjoyed an enviable publishing record, and I see you don't get bogged down with any one subject. What compelled you to turn to poetry?
Well, it wasn't a turn to poetry so much as a return to poetry. I began life as a writer as a very young child, and the first thing I ever published was a poem.
No kidding.
Yeah, I published it when I was 10 years old. So it's something that has always sort of been in my blood, I guess. Yeah. My mother had been an English teacher before she got married. And then after she was married and I was, maybe in the fifth or sixth grade, she resumed by substitute teaching. So there was always this element of literature at home. She used to read. One of my favorite memories is of her reading The Charge of the Light Brigade to me. I got so caught up in the rhythm. I certainly didn't know the story behind it at the time. But
what was your first poem about?
Oh, my first poem. It was a very ordinary poem about the frost coming and decorating the window.
Oh,
yes, no. very childish. Not just childlike, but childish.
Well, the title of your book, The Dead Are So Disappointing, is poignant.
Yeah.
And very suggestive of your uneasy relationship with your father. Did you undertake this as a kind of therapy? And does art work in that way?
Well, it does for me. There are other writers, of course, who have expressed this usefulness that they have found in writing. Virginia Woolf perhaps being the most famous.
Oh, yes.
Of course, they didn't save her life. We all know she killed herself. Haven't done that yet. And yet it does help me. She says in one of her essays that when she puts it down, when she puts things into words, it attains a kind of wholeness. And the wholeness means that it can't hurt her any longer.
Uh-huh.
And I find that to be my experience too. In fact, when I teach, especially when I teach women's literature, I urge the students in the class to try it themselves, because I have found it so useful over the years to turn to poetry. It allows me absolute control over the story, and I always tell them that. I tell them about some of the poems I have written about men I used to date, and you know how I could turn them anything I wanted to, when I turn them into the subject of a poem. And so you do have
revenge is the best.
Well, I don't know that it's revenge,
or it could be.
It could be. It certainly could
Who
be.
Who was it that said, "You don't if." If you don't behave well, I'll put you in my book.
Oh, I don't know that. Dorothy Parker?
Probably.
I don't know. But what I do in the poems is tell a story. And although each poem is meant to stand alone, and I believe each one does.
It does.
They are also meant to be read together in the order that they appear there. This is a bound book, not loose leaf. And it's the form of the poem, of course, that acts as a constraint on me, because you cannot say everything in a poem. You are limited by the genre itself to be more suggestive. Intimate things rather than explain everything, and I think that's a good exercise for someone who is suffering, because the tendency is just to sort of lay it all out and allow it to remain kind of
Too.
chaotic.
It's not a lament. It,
No, yeah,
it's
it's not. It's not at all.
more
It's
very, very controlled throughout the whole book, and it is beautifully
Well,
expressed.
thank you. Thank you. I mean, it represents my attempt to understand. So each poem, I hadn't quite thought of it in this way, but each poem sort of is an answer to a question or a solution to a problem. That's the way I think. That's the way I teach. That's the way I do my research, is this time-honored fashion of, asking myself a question and what the answer is. And of course, there are many questions that lie
Well, that's
behind
part
this
of your
book.
legacy too, is the intellectualization of behavior.
Yeah, it is. And I don't quite know where that came from. My father, I think the poems make quite evident, taught me to think. He was brilliant. And he wanted me to be able to think logically. And I'm left-handed. And so although I'm in my right mind, I was not accessing necessarily the logical side of my mind. And so I think that combination of being left-handed and perhaps being programmed almost to access the artistic side of the brain, and then having my father come in and teach me to be extraordinarily logical, I think that accounts for a lot of the characteristics of the poems, because I think I have very vivid imagery,
You do.
and my metaphors are unusual, and I like the rhythm of the poems. They really are meant to be spoken aloud, and yet there is this intellectuality that's in there as I try to understand what was happening and why it might have happened, and what it meant to me. And the poems are meant for other people too. This is one of the things that I told the newspaper when they interviewed me, that because of the painful experiences I've had, I know what it feels like to think that you're the sort of the only one who's had this experience. I mean, on one level that's not true, because we're all human. But you can feel very lonely in your fear or in your unhappiness, in your pain. And so I talk very personally about myself, but I'm using myself as a way to remind other people that, yeah, there's somebody else out there who knows what you're going through.
The poems are sad in their expression of a failure to resolve this the closeness of the father-daughter relationship, and yet there many of them are quite funny. I like the one, mind for the taking on the wild pets that failed to thrive, shall we say. And the one Freud taught us to think, and that's the one about your hair.
Yeah, I'm going to read
And
that tonight.
oh, are you
Yeah,
good?
yes, I am.
Good. Those two were my
Were
favorites.
they?
And that was one of my questions, was how does this kind of narrative help you deliver the poem? The amusing story with all its images that you suddenly resolve into some statement about you and your father. I thought that was really very, very I can't think of the
I
word.
wish I
It
could
was
help you.
useful.
Oh, I'm not quite sure what you're saying about the humor in them, though.
Well, when you
I mean,
are,
I know the humor's
the
there. It's
humor
there
is there.
intentionally, and I'm glad you recognize it and feel comfortable about mentioning it,
Oh,
because
yes.
when I gave a reading a couple years ago, and Joyce Ladenson announced the title, "The Dead Are So Disappointing," one of my students told me later, he said, "I laughed. I thought that was a funny title." And I said, "It is." It's intended to be funny. He said, "Well, I was the only one who laughed." I said, "Well,
Well, there's a lot of the black humor in
Oh,
this
yes.
and the little twist, but I guess what I was getting at is how you managed to bring in this very difficult relationship of you and your father and still tell a good story that has at the root of it some aspect of your relationship with your father. About how you can, well, I like the image, for instance, you stand in the mirror and you see your father, not your hair.
Well, I'm trying to figure out how to approach this answer. I can think of it in terms of individual poems. The book begins with a poem, Fish Story, which of course is a joke since my name is Fishburne. I did almost drown.
Get
Right. That's what someone would had asked me the other day. Did you almost drown, Kathy? And I said, yes, I did fell in the river. I did fall in the river, rather. And so there's this notion that goes through all of the poems that there are voices in me that are the voices of my mother, the voices of my father, the voice of my father, the voice of my sister, and so forth. So in a way, we're all in this story, and they're helping me tell the story. And one of the things that I do, as you mentioned in introducing me very generously, is I write books.
You sure do.
And so although each poem is a poem that can be understood on its own, it is also part of a story. And so one of the secrets is to keep coming back to the story that you want to tell, and then arranging the poems in the order that tells the story most clearly, most coherently, most effectively. When I got one of the earlier drafts done, I felt that there was something missing, and what had been missing was my mother. And so I went back and wrote some poems that actually occur earlier in the collection, but I felt that I was sort of isolating my father, and me and our relationship too much from the family itself. That this is a family drama, very much, as I
Oh,
say in
yes.
one of the poems, like Tennessee Williams
Yes,
or Eugene O'Neill
yes.
would be telling.
And the last image in the book, as I recall, is your mother standing in the door reading the weather.
No, is that
Isn't
the one
that
I
the
put
last
down?
one? Or I
No, the
remember if
last,
it.
no, that's
Perhaps that's the
earlier.
last image I
That may be
remember.
the last image you remember. No, the narrative, as all my narratives do, ends in a kind of reconciliation. I mean, there are hard things that are being said here. There are painful things. I don't know that anyone really has a quote-unquote happy childhood, but the poem is about the painful thing. The poems are about the painful things in my childhood. And yet, through writing the poems, and coming to a greater understanding of myself and my father and our relationship, I came to a better understanding of my mother. And so I end the poem on, end the collection on this note of reconciliation, where I speak in this rather arcane language to my father, where I'm telling him that I have balanced his checkbook.
Yes, I love that image. You trying to relate to him and things that he understands.
I knew that all that was left to me, because he really had his mind stolen by a series of strokes that had occurred over the years. And the last few days that I saw him, I was not there when he died, but the last few days that I saw him, he was really in very bad shape. He was such a smart man that
It's very sad to see that,
well, it's
right?
very sad to see it. It also was difficult for a lot of people to know that he had had trouble because he was so smart. There was a lot there to lose, and so, but he still had a lot left when he had lost something. And that was such a terribly poignant moment for me because I remember it so vividly. I was telling him that I'd balanced the checkbook, and it was a terrible mess. And my father was just scrupulous in his record keeping. And he tried to tell me that he knew it needed to be done. And I didn't understand him at first, and I had to say to him, "I can't understand what you're trying to tell me." And then he managed to get just enough out so I knew what he meant. And that moment,
That was very meaningful,
it was. It was,
a touching moment.
yeah.
You've alluded to this, I think, already earlier, but the outdoors and animals are so
Oh yeah.
important in metaphor in your poetry. I see them almost as emblems of the opposite of your relationship to your father. They're unquenchable, unquestioning, undemanding love. And the your father's message of you're not good enough, or you can do more, or do better. And it works beautifully. It's really very nice. But using nature is common in literature. How do you make it fresh? How do you keep these images fresh?
Well, that's a good question.
I
Why don't
suppose
you
it's
tell me?
talent. I guess what I'm saying is the images are fresh. Can you comment on that?
Why are they fresh? Why they're the outdoors? I spent an
Fresh.
enormous time outdoors as a child. I spent my childhood reading and exploring the outdoors. It amazes me now with what boldness I could explore. I don't know that I would let a child
Didn't you
today
have a
do that.
poem about that, about your
Yeah,
father
yeah.
who wanted you to be a boy, and so.
Well, I don't know that it was because he wanted me to be a boy to do that, but he certainly wanted me to know all of these things. And we had all sorts of reference guides in the house, and we were quite famous in town. People would call us, we were the reference librarians, if you will, of the town I grew up in. It's kind of a joke. And so I gained very early on a very intimate knowledge of nature. And I think it's a ref I think the poems reflect that very early knowledge that I have, that there isn't anything artificial there. I'm not having now to find out about it in order to incorporate it.
I
I'm
see.
going back to something that really is in me so deeply that I don't know that I can excavate its origins. I mean, I remember vividly doing a lot of things, and many of the images that are in the poems refer to actual events in my life. And I just think that it was in part because my father taught me to be such a good observer of nature that I remember those things, and so I have access to them. And I work hard on
Still
my
crisply
poems.
there. Oh, it's very apparent, very apparent.
I mean, I toil over them, and I look for the right word, and I look up the meanings of words, and if I can find a word that can carry several
I
meanings at
had to
once,
look
I'll
up
choose that.
zeugma.
Yes.
Seen that before.
Well, the most famous of
It's
that
very
is
aptly used.
it's from the Rape of the Lock, stain her honor or her new brocade. And of course, those are two different levels. And what I was trying to suggest in my use of the zeugma was the fact that the pain of losing my hair and the pain of my father were not really on two different levels. I was experiencing them about the same, which I know shocks people.
I just have one more question.
Sure.
Are you working on another book of poetry now,
Yeah,
or
two.
two more?
Two more,
Okay.
yeah. Well, I've just about finished with both of them, actually. I'm working on, and I'm going to read from them also tonight. I'm working on a very unusual, quite postmodern collection called The Language of Pain. And I've taken as my challenge in those poems to make pain speak. It is perhaps, after birth and death and sexual relations, the most common of human experiences. And yet we have, for many different reasons, a great difficulty when we try to talk about pain. And so I have written 61 poems that speak to 61 different aspects of pain.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. And then I've interspersed with them what I call strange poems, where I do a couple visual homages to painters, and I do it with my drawing tool board. That's what it's called? Toolbar, whatever it's called on the
On the
computer. On the
computer,
computer,
okay.
yeah. And then I use language in amongst the drawing part of it. And then I have quotations from other writers who have tried to deal with aspects of pain too. It's a really exciting project, I think. I'm
Oh, I
quite
look
proud of
forward
it.
to it.
Yeah.
How close are you to
Well, I think it's
wrapping it
done. I
up?
think it's done. I'm looking for a publisher for it right now. Then I've also written a collection of poems called The Resurrection of Corey. Corey being Persephone, who
Oh,
was,
okay.
kidnapped by Hades, and her mother Demeter went looking for her, and of course that's how we got the seasons, because when Corey was in Hades, she ate six pomegranate seeds, and in those 6 months then that Demeter must leave her with Hades, we have fall and winter, and then she gets 6 months reprieve and gets to come back, and Demeter is happy, so we have spring and summer. And so what I've done in this collection is taken a lot of the mythological stories of mothers and daughters and written a collection that draws on my personal experience of being a daughter, not a mother. I don't have any children. And then what I know from myth. And then I've also been reading a fascinating book by Sarah Blaffer Hardy called Mother Nature. And so there are some stories in there about quote unquote unnatural mothers and very natural mothers in nature. So there's a lot of resonance in this collection that comes from other
Medea, making,
sources. Yeah.
Well, they are consistent with your career to date. They're quite different, though,
Yeah,
right?
yeah, yeah.
So,
I get bored easily.
apparently. Well, I want to give you a little while to collect yourself before your reading this evening, and I thank you very much
Well,
for
thank
talking
you.
with us.
Quite welcome.